Good evening. It is wonderful to be here. As the guys have already said, my name's Hannah. It is just wonderful to be here this evening. The drive up was grim, but now that I'm here, I feel so welcome. That singing was just wonderful. That just was what I needed this evening, so thank you for that. As I said, my name is Hannah. I am from Belfast, as you can maybe tell. And my home church is Orangefield Presbyterian. I have grown up in Belfast, apart from a very brief stint in London. I'm back here and loving it. I've worked for Tear Fund now for the last 4 years. And Tear Funds, I'm sure lots of you have heard of before, but just in case you haven't, or you're maybe not familiar with what we do, Tear Funds is a charity that works all over the world through the local church to help people who are living in poverty. I think that is class, because the people who know the people who are living in poverty the best are the people who live beside them. So you guys all know, if you're late for a Sunday service, you probably know where that last spot's going to be. You probably know if you were to host a barbecue here for the community, you'd probably know the kind of people that would turn up. If you probably know the local streets, all the local shortcuts. You guys know this area best. And so what Tear Fund does is try to equip the local church like this all over the world to help the people who live near them, who are living in poverty, because they know best what is going on and maybe what is the most needed. So I love Tear Fund. I guess I'm biased, but I think it's fantastic. We're helping people who are hungry, people who need education, people who have been trafficked, refugees, people who are living in areas of conflict. People all over the world who are living in poverty. So that's a wee bit about me, a wee bit about Tear Funds. This evening, we are going to be talking about an ethical Christmas. That might fill you with fear and dread, or might be really exciting. I'm going to let you just mull that one over. But this evening, we're talking about an ethical Christmas. I love Christmas. I don't know, maybe some people here are like, oh no, she's one of those. I love Christmas. As soon as I hear those words on the TV, holidays are coming, it is the season, it's always the real thing. Oh my goodness, I am so excited. I love Christmas. Has anyone here got their Christmas tree up yet? Yeah, one. I'm with you. Like, that's fantastic. Everyone else is like, oh no. I love Christmas. And when I was writing this the other day, I was just so excited. I love Christmas. So this is a joy to be coming here this evening to talk to you a little bit about what we do at Christmas, how we can make it a wee bit more ethical. We buy loads of stuff at Christmas, right? Whether it is food or new outfits for parties or presents or silly Secret Santa gifts, we buy loads of stuff at Christmas, don't we? And it is such a wonderful time of the year. It is full of fun and friends and family. And for Christians, it's a time for us to remember the miraculous birth of Jesus and everything that that means for us now. It's a great time of fun to get together with people and to have a rest. But how can we make sure that the choices that we make at Christmas reflect our love for Jesus and our faith? We look at Jesus and we see how he loved other people, how he served those who were poor and marginalized, and we're invited to do the same, right? So how can we make choices at Christmas that show other people how much Jesus loves them and helps us to serve the least of these, as Jesus talks about in Matthew 25? How can we serve other people and love other people? How can we pursue togetherness and love rather than division and inequality at this time of year? How can we be mindful of the thousands of people all over the world who are living in poverty at Christmas time? Christmas is such an exciting time. It's such a fun time. And it is right and good that we celebrate Jesus' birth and enjoy spending time with friends and family. But in the midst of it all, it can be really hard to even give a thought to people who are living in poverty. And we might not have thought much about people who are living in poverty at Christmas, and we've probably thought even less about the fact that our Christmas here has an effect on people all over the world. So for the next wee bit of time, we're going to do some thinking about that. I'm going to offer you some thoughts about how I think the Bible's maybe steering us in this, and some things that maybe we aren't even always aware of when we go about our normal Christmas routine. And then some tips around how we can have an ethical Christmas. How can we love others and love the planet this Christmas? So use this next 20 minutes, half an hour. It's a rare time of kind of quiet, not just being too distracted, and maybe some time of reflection at this really busy time. And have a think about what are your plans for the next couple of weeks, over the next month, who you have to buy for, the events you're going to, the work Christmas dinner, all these different things that are going to be happening around this time of year. And see if anything that we talk about this evening matches up with any of that, and if there's wee nuggets you can take away. So we're diving right in. The reality is that the stuff that we buy here, the way that we treat the planet, and the way that we get rid of stuff whenever we've finished with it, is linked to people all over the world and has an effect on people all over the world. There are lots of effects from our decisions and choices that we very rarely see, like our choice of what to buy. But there are knock-on effects all the time because our world is so globalized and our world is so connected. And I wanted to show you a map that I found on a clothing store website that just helped me, and hopefully it'll help you understand this connectedness a wee bit more clearly. It's a wee bit tricky to see up there, I've just realized. But when we buy a shirt, we normally think about things like, does it fit me well? Is the color right? Does it suit me? Does it work for the occasion I'm trying to buy it for? All this sort of thing, right? We normally just think about the product that is right in front of us. But what we might not so naturally think about is how that shirt got to be in front of us. Check out this map to give you a bit of an idea of the journey that that shirt has taken. So the shirt started way back in India, on the right-hand side of the map there, as cotton grown by farmers and picked by cotton workers. The cotton then travels to the factory or several factories where it's made into material, and the material's made into a shirt. And then it's transported halfway around the world to maybe like a shop's headquarters, maybe even stops on the way to go to a packaging factory. And then from the shop's headquarters or warehouse in the UK, it's dispersed to the shop, where then we pick it up, we see it in front of us. So a shirt in a shop is way more than just a shirt in a shop. It's full of the earth's natural resources, of man-made fibers, of stories from factories, of fuel for transport, of designers' ideas, or farmers' expertise, coming in and coming out of the lives of loads and loads of people. And so, when we pick an item to buy, we are delving into a much bigger process than just picking up the thing that is the right size and the right color. Your choice to buy that item actually means a lot more, whether or not it's what you maybe need for that party or that present or the thing in the house that you need or that ingredient or whatever it might be. You don't just say yes to the item that you are buying. You're saying yes to the journey and the stories behind the item. And there's a verse in the Bible that has helped me think through how and what I buy and how my faith affects my shopping habits and just what the Bible has to say about some of the more sort of mundane, everyday things that go on in my life, like shopping. I'm going to read it to you in the Message, but it's Romans 12, verses 1 and 2, if you want to look it up in a different translation. This is just an easier one for me to understand. So it says this. So here's what I want you to do, God helping you. Take your everyday, ordinary life, your sleeping, eating, going to work, and walking around life, and place it before God as an offering. Embracing what God does for you is the best thing you can do for him. Don't become so well adjusted to your culture that you fit into it without even thinking. Instead, fix your attention on God. You'll be changed from the inside out. Readily recognize what he wants from you and quickly respond to it. Unlike the culture around you, always dragging you down to its level of immaturity, God brings the best out of you, develops well-formed maturity in you. I have found this verse incredibly challenging over the years. We are to offer our whole lives to Jesus. I think at one point I understood that verse to mean more like the big decisions in my life, so where I should go to uni, or what sort of job I should be aiming for, or when's the right time for me to move house, or things to do with relationships, or all sorts of different things, the big things in life, or even how it affects my character. So I give over my tendency to be selfish, or to speak badly of other people, or not to be so generous. But the more and more that I have read this verse, I think it's speaking about something potentially much more boring and much more mundane, but much, much more challenging. Yes, of course we give over those big decisions to God, and yes, we should be aiming to reflect a godly character amongst our friends and our colleagues. But what about that boring everyday stuff, like the way that I shop, the food that I choose to buy, how I pray, how I decide to package up my packed lunch, how I decide to meal plan, how I work out how I'm going to get to work in the morning, how I approach Christmas this year. These verses are talking about our regular lives, as much as it's talking about the extraordinary moments. And so I'm challenged to give over the way that I shop to God and to pursue his character and his ways in shopping. I'm challenged to give over the food that I choose to eat and to pursue his character and his ways. I'm challenged to give over the rubbish that I put in my bin and the stuff that I throw away to pursue his character and his heart for the planet that he has made. Because it's all part of our worship to him, isn't it? Our everyday, mundane, boring, normal decisions can reflect him. And all of a sudden, knowing how connected we are to people all over the world through our regular everyday habits and our choices, maybe we need to adjust the way that we're doing things. Because our world is so connected, because my actions here affect people all over the world, I'm challenged to choose to make decisions that will help me to love both Jesus and other people. I find that really challenging. This verse, it also talks about not fitting into the culture around us. And I think especially at Christmas, our culture tends to sweep everything and everyone up with it, doesn't it? We need to get all the fun Christmas things that come up. So the chocolate advent calendar, the IKEA gingerbread house, that nice Marks and Spencer mold punch, the Starbucks gingerbread latte. I need to make sure I've bought enough food to feed pretty much the whole town because Tesco's is going to be closed for 2 days. I need to organise that Secret Santa. I need to make sure I've watched Love Actually at the right time before Christmas. Whoa, Christmas is crazy. And there's something wonderful about the Christmas buzz. I love it. But I think when we are swept away with the culture at the expense of loving God and loving others, we need to check ourselves. When we start to take into account what we buy, where we buy things from, do we really need that? Will it just get thrown out? Is there loads of plastic packaging on that? Can we check the factory standards? Was that flown or shipped? What's the carbon footprint on that? Our Christmas habits maybe will start to change, and we won't be able to just accept the Christmas culture that is being offered to us. We'll have to consider to make an alternative decision. And the really exciting thing about that is that people notice. And when people notice that you're doing it a wee bit differently, they ask questions because they're like, what are you doing? And not only do you get the chance to say, like, oh yeah, I've chosen not to buy from regular shops this year. I'm only going to buy from this shop because I know that their factory workers are paid fairly. And actually, I think that's important because I'm a Christian and Jesus loves us and loves that factory worker. And I want to love that factory worker the same way that Jesus does. All of a sudden, we get to spread the really good news about Christmas and about Jesus at the same time as shopping ethically. And the more people who see what you're doing and understand why you're doing it, the more awareness that we raise and the more that people will want to join you. You have influence over the people that you're friends with and your family and your church. People who know you and want to hang out with you, who want to share your values, they want to have things in common with you, they're going to notice and will be inspired to change as well. There's a cool African proverb that I heard a while ago that helped me think through this a wee bit more. It's actually told by a monk in 1100 AD. This is what he said. He said, "When I was a young man, I wanted to change the world. But I found it was really hard to change the whole world. So I decided to try and change my nation. But I found it was really hard to change my nation too. So I decided I was going to focus on changing my town. I couldn't change my town. And as an older man, I tried to change my family. Now I'm an old man, and I realize that the only thing I can change is myself. I realized that if long ago I had changed myself, I could have had an impact on my family. My family and I could have had an impact on the town. The town could have changed the nation, and I could have indeed changed the world." When we change ourselves, when we're changed by Jesus, when we go out of our way to live differently and to shop ethically, to love our global neighbours all the time because it's just part of our lifestyle, when we allow God to change ourselves, God can use us to influence our culture. And let's not just get sucked into the culture around us, but choose to live differently in a way that shows the world around us Jesus' radical love through the way that we choose to treat other people. So, how do we start to move this to a more practical note? How can we make choices that are going to help us to live out our faith in our shopping and in how we can love people who are living in poverty? And I mean that every day through our lifestyle, through our mentality of it being a lifestyle and just being a part of everyday life rather than maybe a one-off thing, although that's great to do as well. So I've got a couple of questions that I think you could keep in mind, that we could all keep in mind over the next while when you're thinking about Christmas, when you're going to do your shopping. So these are the questions. Number one, who made it? Number two, what's in it? And number three, what's going to happen to it when I'm finished? I'm just going to take a second to think about those three different things. So the first one is who made it? If we just nip back over to our map that we were looking at earlier, so this process starts way back at the cotton farm. I'm guessing, considering your event tomorrow night, most of you will have heard of fair trade before. We can start our ethical decision-making way back at the start of that shirt that we were talking about earlier. The question is, do you know if the farmer is getting paid fairly, or is there a company that's driving prices down and down to be able to sell cheap products elsewhere? Maybe if a neighbouring farmer is giving a better deal, the company is going to go with them, and so prices will be reduced and reduced until the farmers are being totally ripped off for their product. And that's not just for cotton and shirts. You're maybe more likely to have encountered fairly traded products in supermarkets like tea, coffee, chocolate, spices, juices, that sort of thing. But the question is, how has the farmer been treated? What sort of transaction is it? We get the chance to value that person, that farmer, as they help to produce the clothes that we wear or the food that we buy or the stuff that we put in our houses. All that stuff that just serves our lifestyles here in Northern Ireland. And by choosing a product that has been fairly traded, we get the chance to love that farmer and to support him by paying him what he's due, what he's owed, by paying him a fair price, and to live out our Christian values. When we choose the product that hasn't been fairly traded, it's worth thinking about how does that help us live out our values. The next step on the map then, we get to the factory where our t-shirt was being stitched together. And again, we encounter another opportunity for us to shop in a way that demonstrates our values and Jesus' love. We've all heard about sweatshops, right? And sort of boycotting the worst shops. That's kind of been the trend for the last number of years. I don't know if you heard the news a couple of years ago. So in 2013, it's actually quite a few years ago, the Rana Plaza factory, which was a garment-making factory in Bangladesh, collapsed. And there were thousands of people working inside making clothes. And that day, 1,129 people died. It was discovered that actually the building had really serious structural problems, and the other shops and banks that were in the same big block, the same big complex, were closed immediately, but the garment workers were told to come back the next day and to keep working, and that's when the building collapsed. Do we know anything about the factories where our clothes are being made? I want to tell you about a guy called Nazib. So Nazib, at the time this photo was taken anyway, is 14. He lives in India, and he was actually trafficked to work in a clothes factory. He was forced to work for 21 hours a day, 6 days a week. That's about 504 hours a month. And he was offered 11.9 pence per hour. He was invited to work in Punjab, which is thousands of kilometres from his family and his home, in a clothes factory. And there he had to sew 3,000 zips an hour. Forced labour is a type of trafficking, and it's happening all over the place. But even if a factory worker hasn't been trafficked, they still might not have any other option but to stay at the unfairly paid job that maybe has horrible working conditions. If you're in a position where you need that really tiny amount of money to feed your family every day because you're living in poverty, you aren't in a good position to look for another job. If you miss one day of work, you'll be fired and have absolutely nothing to feed your family with. You don't really have any other option but to keep working there. Do we know who made our clothes? And the answer is probably not. So I invite you, let's find out. We have an opportunity to live out our Christian values by being intentional about buying ethical products. So contact shops and ask them, what are your factory rules? And chances are they'll have a standard trading and ethics answer, which sometimes isn't always a great answer, and more of a tick box exercise to get around some rules. But ask them to change. Ask them to do more. And if you're not satisfied that they're treating their factory staff well, maybe it's time to evaluate whether or not we shop there. Or maybe we can look for an alternative product in a shop that you are confident in. So how can we love the people that made our T-shirts or our stuff? If the factory that made your clothes was in your living room, I wonder if that would change the way that we choose which products that we're going to pick. So, number one, do you know who made it? If not, can you find out? And if you can't find out, maybe consider buying from a company that is intentionally transparent so that you can find out more about the workers that are involved. And just, by the way, before we move on to point two, to end Nazib's story, thankfully Nazib got home safely. He was able to borrow a wee bit of money and take the train home to his family and escape his traffickers. Tier Fund were able to provide his family with a loan to start raising chickens. And they became chicken farmers. And Tier Fund's partner in that area are helping to train Nazib's family in poultry farming. That means that they can trade chickens to generate an income, and that gives them enough money to feed their family. And Nazib doesn't have to go across the world, across the country, to an unknown job that is potentially very dangerous. The same partner have also helped Nazib's mum to set up a self-help group. And through that, they're raising awareness of the dangers of travelling really far away for work and of traffickers who come to trick families with fake job offers. So they're raising awareness in their communities and spreading the word to try and keep other kids like Nazib safe. So, number one, do you know who made it? Number two, do you know what's in it? Knowing what is in the stuff that we buy is important because often the chemicals or processes involved in making the things that we buy are damaging the environment. Some processes and products are produced in incredibly energy-intensive ways. And in fact, I don't know if you knew this, but the fashion industry is the second biggest polluter behind the oil industry. So why does this matter when we're talking about an ethical Christmas? The Bible tells us that it's important that we are good stewards of the earth and that we prioritise creation care. In our world today, we know that climate change tends to hit the poorest people in our world the hardest. And that means that people who are already living in poverty are being pushed further and further into poverty because of the effects of climate change. So, for example, a family who are already living in poverty, the mum is a subsistence farmer, which means she doesn't really have a job as such, but she grows food that they eat straight away for her and her family. But the climate changes and there's floods one year and her crops are ruined. The next year at harvest time, there's no rain at all. The crops are ruined. The weather for them is getting more and more unpredictable, and it's making farming really difficult. For them, no crops means they don't have any food, which means they are starving. And I actually got to meet that woman last year. And so loving and serving those in the world who are living in poverty means we also have to care for the planet, because the effects of the weather are hitting them the hardest. And it's important for us to look into the chemicals that are used in the processes of making our clothes and our products, to look into how plastics are made and how the Earth's natural resources are being used. Do we know what has actually gone into the things that we're buying? So, for example, what do Doritos, shampoo, and washing detergent all have in common? It's like a weird joke. It's not a joke. It's palm oil. So palm oil is this incredible discovery. It's a vegetable oil that's pretty much used in everything from ice cream to biofuel. The thing is, though, that it's so amazing that the palm oil industry has become huge. And we actually now need so much palm oil to satisfy the volume that we are using in our everyday products that we are tearing down huge amounts of natural lands to make palm plantations. According to the WWF, which is the World Wildlife Fund, by the way, not the wrestling, have said that an area the equivalent size of 300 football fields of rainforest is cleared every hour to make way for palm oil production. That has a huge impact on our environment, which has consequences for people who are living in poverty. Flooding and droughts, more extreme weather, they are ruining crops, houses, livelihoods, infrastructure, all sorts of things. And so if you're already low income or if you're already living in poverty, this can make your situation critical. What's in the stuff that we are buying? What is in its story to get it to the shelf that's in front of us? Is buying that product helping us to love our global neighbours? Is it living generously towards other people and living lightly on the planet? Where can we find products that are natural or organic or local or reclaimed, upcycled, secondhand? And how can we have a Christmas and a lifestyle afterwards that lives lightly on the planet? So, number two, what is in it? Number three, what is going to happen to it when you or the person that you're buying it for has finished and you're done with it? I'm guessing some of you might have seen a video that this picture is from on Facebook over the last few while. It's been doing the rounds. The BBC released a video that was just a short clip of them discovering huge volumes of plastic floating. This is the sea near the Caribbean. They described it as islands of plastic. Plastic for miles. I think they said it reached 2 miles wide. Just huge amounts of plastic in the sea. Do we know anything about what we throw away? Probably not. So I've got a couple of statistics that blew my mind. If food waste were a country, it would be the world's third largest emitter of greenhouse gases behind America and China. In the UK, we throw away a staggering 460,000 tons of bread every year. That's the equivalent of 177 million slices a week. And that is a lot of bread. There are a billion people in the world who are underfed. There's 2 billion people in the world who are overfed. And yet we waste a third of all food that is produced. There are around 23,000 tons of toothbrushes that end up in US landfill every year. And in the UK alone, we use and throw away 5,000 paper cups per minute. And that's crazy. Each minute we throw away 5,000 paper cups. That's 7 million cups per day, 2.5 billion cups per year. Our culture around us encourages us to buy and buy and buy. Always make sure that you have more than enough. Don't worry about getting a new one. Go ahead. Sure. Just get a second one to be on the safe side. We're a culture that is totally consumed with consumerism. But this encourages us to buy more, even whenever we don't actually need more. We buy more than we need, which means that we waste. The food goes off, or we throw away the clothes that really just need one button sewn back on, or we get rid of our phone because we're due an upgrade, even though it wasn't broken. And we get coffees and disposable cups, we use plastic bags once and throw them away. We take in more than we need, which means that we waste. And in fact, we are currently using up the Earth's resources at such a rate, it's like we think we have three planets. That's how quickly we're extracting the Earth's resources. But we don't have three planets to use. We just have one. So do you need it or are you going to waste it? And obviously, our waste then also has huge impacts on our planet. We talk about throwing things away, right? But really, there isn't an away. Away isn't a thing. The Independent actually recently reported that sea creatures, even in the deepest parts of the ocean, have been found to have plastic fibres in their stomachs for the first time. Let's not take our planet for granted. It's not indestructible or never-ending, and as we damage our planet, the effects are beginning to show, and it's making life really difficult or even impossible for people who are living in poverty. So, when you're picking what to buy this Christmas, consider what is going to happen to it whenever you're finished with it. Is it going to go mouldy and need thrown out? Is it plastic that is just going to get thrown in the bin but actually ends up in the sea and never really degrades? Is it just a total waste? We buy so many things at Christmas that we really just don't need. Is it a waste of the Earth's precious resources? Or can it be reused? Is it going to be really worthwhile for me to buy it? Or can you maybe borrow someone else's? Is there an alternative with less packaging? These are the sort of questions we can ask ourselves. So the third thing is, what is going to happen to it when you've finished? For an ethical Christmas this year, when we are buying food and things to bring to people's houses and presents and outfits, ask yourself those three questions. Who made it? What's in it? And what's going to happen to it when I've finished with it? We are called as Christians to prioritize a lifestyle that cares for others, that practically loves people who are living in poverty and that lives lightly on the planet and that shouts about Jesus. So let's pursue an ethical Christmas that does those things. And remember, when we say yes to the item, we're saying yes to the stories, the processes, the chemicals, the factory standards, the impact on the environment. We say yes to the item and to the journey that it's taken to reach our shop shelves. So, let's do it differently this Christmas. Let's choose this Christmas to love our neighbours, both here and all over the world, and to treat the people who made our stuff and our food in a way that screams of Jesus and not of the culture around us. Let's show our friends and our family that our love for Jesus and for other people is such a high priority for us that we're going to go out of our way to do things differently this Christmas in a way that shows that people are treated fairly and that we're being kind to the planet. I'm going to leave you with a whole host, this slide, I'll put up maybe at the end as well, a whole host of shops and places that over the years I've discovered that are doing exactly that. They're trying to treat people and the planet really well as they make products. There's clothes ones there and then gifts and home stuff as well. And maybe your challenge this evening is you're going to decide the Christmas presents I'm going to buy this year, I'm going to try and make sure that I know how ethical they are. So check those out at the end. I'll leave that wee slide up. And just before I go, I wanted to share another opportunity. If you are a young adult here this evening and you've been challenged about how we can respond to poverty and injustice as Christians, I'd really recommend coming along to a weekend that we are hosting at the end of January. It's the 26th to the 28th of January. It's at Benone. It's going to be a beautiful weekend away, one that will brighten up your January. So bring a friend. It's going to be a weekend full of fun, fellowship and learning. Last year, I was really challenged and inspired by the chat from my peers, from speakers. I'm really excited to go out and live differently in the world and try and change the world. It's really a weekend not to be missed, so if you're interested, check that out. And finally as well, if you're interested in more stories, more news, what Tear Fund's doing, especially at Christmas, we're going to be posting lots about exactly what we've been speaking about this evening. You can follow us on social media at We're Tear Fund. So remember those three things. I challenge you this evening to remember those three things and to think about them in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks whenever we go out into Christmas. Who's made it, what's in it, what's going to happen to it when you're done with it. And I hope you have a really wonderful Christmas. Let me just pray for us before we finish. Heavenly Father, thank you for Christmas. Thank you for sending Jesus, and thank you that we can celebrate that with friends and family and fun at this time of year. Father, you speak to us through that verse in Romans, and I pray, Father, that you'll remind us of that over the next month as we're going out, not to get swept away with the culture around us, but, Father, to intentionally pursue you and your love for people on this planet. I pray, Father, that you will encourage us and inspire us and help us to help each other to pursue an ethical Christmas this year as we step out to love people who are living in poverty. We just pray that you'll bless us at this time of year as well. In your name, Jesus. Amen.